We have these debates about whether Pennsylvania is Midwestern or Northeastern.
Northeastern, but parts of it are Midwest.
It's Midwestern. Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk, and today we're coming to you from the state that could very well decide the 2020 presidential election. And that state is Pennsylvania. And more specifically, we're in Philadelphia right now. I don't want to overstate the point. We have no idea what things are going to look like in 2020, but if the race is close, Pennsylvania will be key. In 2016, the state arguably tied with Wisconsin as the tipping point state by our count. Both parties are already taking the fight for its 20 electoral college votes seriously. President Trump held a rally here earlier this year, and Democratic hopefuls have swung through. Joe Biden's campaign is even headquartered here. So since Pennsylvania is going to be a key state in 2020, we wanted to take stock of where things stand now, how politics have evolved since 2016, and what the math looks like going forward. And here with me to do that are G. Terry Madonna. He's the director of the Franklin and Marshall College poll and professor of public affairs at Franklin and Marshall. Hi, Terry. How's it going?
I'm fine.
And thanks for coming today.
Well, no, thanks for having me.
And also here with us, of course, is editor-in-chief Nate Silver. How's it going, Nate?
Good. I like Philadelphia. I consider it to be the one of the top two cities, the other being New York on the Acela corridor.
There you go.
Okay.
So that means Boston, you're not one of the top two. Washington, sorry.
What about Baltimore? I'm a pretty big fan of Baltimore.
Baltimore might be three.
Fair enough.
Providence, New Haven.
I need to stay out of this discussion, obviously, as a Pennsylvania native and resident. Yeah. I don't want to get into trouble. You know what answer I would give you before we even start.
And I'll say that today's episode is part of our 538 on the Road series. It's sponsored by WeWork, and we are at a WeWork right now in downtown Philadelphia. But let's get into it. In your estimation, Nate and Terry, how important of a state is Pennsylvania in 2020?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, the President Trump won election in 2016 largely because he developed a strategy that his campaign referred to as the Rust Belt strategy. The whole point of that was to go after working class voters in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and I'll throw in Ohio, even though it's trending more Republican now. Those were the key states. The Rust Belt strategy was simple. The Democrats walked away from the working class base, which they gained in terms of their party support during the 1930s as a result of the Depression, obviously, and then Roosevelt's New Deal. And what Trump said was the trade deals that had been negotiated earlier were bad. And he talked about redoing NAFTA. He talked about getting rid of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, talked about bringing back coal, bringing back steel. The question isn't, could he do it? It was, Democrats had walked away from that element of their constituency for some time. And so Trump basically won the election because he focused on several of the so-called Rust Belt states, then throw in Florida with its 29 electoral votes, and you get him to actually 306. But as we all know, two of his electors defected. He only ended up with 304.
You know, so one small thing, Pennsylvania has 20 electoral votes, which is twice as many as Wisconsin, which has 10, and more than Michigan, which has 14. And so if kind of trying to do the electoral math, and then losing Pennsylvania is kind of harder than one of those other two if you're a Democrat. You know, in terms of like, what is the most important state for 2020 going to be? I mean, it's like a little bit too early to project that right now, because you need quite precise polling. The answer might be a little bit different if, say, Biden is the nominee versus Kamala Harris or something. But certainly any type of strategy to win back the upper Midwest would, I think, require Pennsylvania. We can go back and forth on this a little bit. I think maybe Pennsylvania is a little bit easier for the Democrat than Wisconsin. I mean, Democrats had a pretty good midterm in Pennsylvania in 2018. I don't want to totally leave out Florida. I mean, it's like kind of the first time this cycle that I've actually kind of, I'm playing with 270towin.com, which is the electoral math site. And I haven't done that yet because it is kind of too early. One thing I did notice is that if Democrats won both Florida and Arizona, then they have 272 electoral votes and they could afford not to win back Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. So they do have this like kind of more southern or Sun Belt strategy open. To me, though, I mean, Florida is a state that's famously disappointed Democrats time and time again in close elections. Pennsylvania is a state that Democrats have had plenty of good years along with occasional bad years. And so I would think that, like, you know, and look, it's not a coincidence that Vice President Biden's campaign is headquartered here, right? Sure.
Yeah, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin for six elections after 1988 went for the Democrats. And so in 2016, the seventh election, all three of them went for, obviously, and I'll throw in Ohio again, for the Republicans, for President Trump. If you take Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, we're talking about 46 electoral votes, 46 electoral votes. So it's going to take a lot of Nevadas and a lot of New Hampshires, if you will, to make up for the size, you know, the number of electoral votes that those three states have. But I agree with Nate. Pennsylvania has been, in the last two decades, more Democratic than Republican. There are about 8.4 million registered voters in the state of Pennsylvania. The Democrats have about an 800,000 active registration voter edge. By active, I mean the people who are registered who actually vote. So they have that 800,000 registration edge. And by the way, the counties out in southwestern Pennsylvania that Donald Trump won, without getting too nerdy and too much in detail, I'm talking about Green, Washington, Westmoreland, Beaver, Cambria, Fayette, just to mention the key ones. Every single one of them has a Democratic voter registration edge, and every single one of them went for Trump, not by 5 points, not by 10 points, by 15 to 25 points. Go up to Luzerne County, Lackawanna and Luzerne, anthracite coal, heavily Democratic. Donald Trump carried Luzerne County by 26, 27,000 votes, and he almost won Lackawanna County, translation Scranton. He only lost Scranton by a couple of thousand votes. So that shows you, and this is the base, was the base of the Democratic Party, working class voters, high school educations or less. These are the folks whose ancestors worked in the mines and the mills, who were looking for some assistance.
How durable is that shift? Have Republicans kept those voters in the midterms? And also, how do they rate Trump today?
Well, the fact of the matter is that the shift really can be traced to Bill Clinton. And you begin to see changes that begin to take place in our state. The shift, for example, in the suburbs, which used to be a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party, began with Clinton to move to the Democrats. These other counties that I'm talking about out in the Southwest and up in the Northeast, the old mining and mill towns, that the shift has been going on for about a decade or so. These are voters who are culturally conservative. They are pro-life on abortion. They're not exactly wild about gay marriage. By the way, don't touch the Second Amendment. They're strong on pro-gun issues. And the modern Democratic Party, which is urban-based. So my five-second analysis is the Democrats are an urban-based party. The Republicans are small-town and rural America. And the battle is over the suburbs. And that's exactly what we saw in 2018 when the Democrats picked up 40 seats in the House, many of them in suburban districts where the demographics tend to be different.
But what about the rural areas that you just mentioned, that where Democrats have an edge in terms of registration, but overwhelmingly went for Trump in 2016? How did those parts of the state go in 2018?
Well, Bob Casey, who won re-election to his third term to the United States Senate, he won, by the way, by 13 points. And Tom Wolf, who won re-election as governor, won by 17 points. If you go and you look at those counties, the Democrats did very well there. Very, very well there. But overall, if you take a look at our state legislature, more and more up in the Northeast and out in the Southwest, in those old mining towns, they're sending Republican lawmakers into our capital, into the state legislature. And they're even electing Republicans to local offices. So the shift and the trend is going on. And right now, I think the Democrats are going to be hard-pressed. If they nominate a progressive, I think they're hard-pressed to carry those parts of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I mean, politics is increasingly fought along urban-rural lines, especially kind of more progressive version of the Democratic Party versus the more Trumpian version of the GOP. In Pennsylvania, really spans the full spectrum in terms of having urban areas that are very urban, rural areas that are very rural, and suburbs that are very competitive. You know, based on some work I've done, one thing I've tried to do is say, okay, if everything were purely about urban versus rural, that was the only thing to determine the vote, then how would different states go? If you look at that, then you find that Pennsylvania is a state that Democrats still need to have as part of their future. You know, Wisconsin and Michigan are actually significantly more rural than Pennsylvania because Detroit and Milwaukee are not as large as Philadelphia. And Clinton did perfectly well in Philadelphia, but the problem is, like, she really underperformed in Western Pennsylvania.
Exactly.
Really underperformed in Northeast Pennsylvania, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, they got some numbers they wanted in Philly, but that wasn't enough anymore. And So, you know, Western Pennsylvania might be the single most important region in the country as far as 2020 goes.
Right. There's no doubt. In order to win, to carry Pennsylvania, Trump is going to have to do extraordinarily well in the northeastern part of the state and the southwest. Now, Nate, you know, we didn't quite get into the suburbs, but here's the way to think about Pennsylvania. If you take Philadelphia and the four suburban counties, that's 30% about.
Yeah.
It varies. 30% of the vote in our state. And even though Hillary Clinton won all four Philadelphia suburban counties, Bucks, Chester, Montgomery, and Delaware counties, and she won Philly, she lost the election by 44,000 votes to a great extent because the size of Trump's victory in the Southwest and the Northeast and the turnout there was so large that pushed him over the top and gave him the 44,000 votes. But the demographics in the suburbs are critical. My sense is long term, if the Republicans don't reverse the Democratic trend in the four suburban Philadelphia counties, this state could go from being purple or light blue, however you want to term it, to more solid blue, just literally because of the size of the four suburban counties. And the demographics there tend to be different.
I know we're talking largely about Pennsylvania today, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention Trump's rally in North Carolina last night, where supporters at the rally started chanting, "Send her back," at the mention of Representative Ilhan Omar. And we've seen some reports about this being a strategy of Trump for 2020. I mean, if that is Trump's strategy, we have no idea whether that's actually his strategy or if it's just who Trump is and what the people who go to Trump rallies want. But if it is a strategy, is that one that works in Pennsylvania?
Well, it works with his base. I mean, you know, because you guys are the experts on polls, that Trump has, what, 88, 90% of Republican voters give him positive job performance. That's his base. I actually think that they like when he gets testy. I think they like when he goes after some of his opponents, the progressive Democrats, I should say, on a personal level. I don't get any sense that turns them off. Conversely, it turns off suburban voters. And I do want to get back to the nature of the demographics in the suburbs that are really different than what we see in rural and small town America and rural and small town PA. But there isn't any doubt that his base is hanging in with him. And people come to me and say, well, maybe there'll be a primary opponent. Well, Bill Weld, okay. And Mark Sanford, okay. We can go through all of that. But right now, the Republican Party is Donald Trump's party. I mean, you can reverse it. You know, Trump has the Republican base. And I don't see much defection. The problem that Trump has is that a higher percentage of Democrats disapprove of his job performance, and he loses independent voters, and that's probably the key to what could happen next year.
Yeah, so talk about the demographics in those suburban areas of the state.
All right, and I think this applies to other pivotal battleground states as well. The suburbs basically have a large number of college-educated voters. That's point number one. Point number two, the Democrats won the midterm election to a great extent because in the suburbs, they won college-educated voters, particularly college-educated female voters. You know, there were defections with college-educated Republican women voters as well. So you have a large proportion of the demography of the suburbs made up of college educated voters. The second group of people are millennials. Millennials are attracted to urban areas. Believe me, there not many of them graduate, go to college and go back to Tioga, Pennsylvania or Bradford. And I'm not criticizing Tioga and Bradford. I'm just saying millennials tend to go to the cities. And now the trend is also for them to live in the suburbs. And you know, as well as anyone, that of all the age demographic groups, the 18 to 34 year olds gave a larger percentage of their vote to Hillary Clinton than any other of the age cohorts, whether we're talking about the baby boomers or, you know, Janet, you can go through whatever the demographics are. So, and guess what? The voters in the suburbs that I'm describing tend to be culturally very liberal. They tend to support gun control. They're not afraid of government intervention. And so you've got a completely different, in a sense, demographic. And they're large again. You know, when you get, when you push with Philly and the suburbs, 1.2 million out of 6 million votes, you get the whole point about where the demographics and the size of the vote in the suburbs takes a state like Pennsylvania.
Yeah, in the exit poll from 2016, Trump won the suburbs throughout Pennsylvania 52-44. He lost the Philadelphia suburbs, but won suburbs in the other parts of the state.
Right.
You know, I mean, that number in some sense would make me a little bit nervous if I was Trump, because I needed to win the suburbs by 8 points to win Pennsylvania by 1 point roughly. And if there's been erosion there. And by the way, he won Wisconsin suburbs 55-39. He won Michigan suburbs as well by 53-42. So all three of those states, if that vote were to erode, then he could have challenges. Also, all three of these states are states where a lot of undecided voters broke late toward Trump.
Broke towards Trump in the last 10 days.
Yeah, it was. There's states where a lot of the voters, it's true nationally, but especially in these three states, the fairly sizable minority of voters who dislike both candidates generally said, let's go ahead and take a chance on Trump.
Trump, yeah.
In these states especially. I'm not sure if that will apply as much.
I agree. Now that you're on to some aspect of the change in the voting that took place, it was the first time we were off on a presidential election. And if you take a look at the polls that were done nationally, the average of the polls had, what, Trump losing to Hillary Clinton by 3 or 4 points. He ended up, what, losing by 2.2%, about 2.9 million votes. It's the state polls that were off. Many of them, like the Franklin and Marshall College poll, we were out of the field 10 days before the election. So we didn't pick up the number of people who, A, made up their mind or changed their mind within the last 10 days, and Trump gained an advantage there. And what we call the Comey effect, when James Comey opened up, said he was opening up the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. So the fact of the matter is that I think Nate is right. That is probably not going to play out in the same way next year as it did in 2016. But here's the key. Will Trump's base, they'll be with him, but will they be as excited about it? And will the turnout be as large as it was in 2016 to offset what is probably going to be a bigger loss in the suburbs, you know, than existed before?
I want to continue this conversation in just a second, but first let me tell you that today's podcast is brought to you by WeWork. From satellite offices to regional headquarters and global campuses, WeWork is designing, building, and operating office space that empowers your people to do their best work. Today, we're recording this podcast at a WeWork right here in Philadelphia at 1900 Market Street. WeWork has 4 locations in Philly, in Center City and Northern Liberties, and they're committing to expanding in Philadelphia and supporting the growth of the city with their 5th location opening this fall. The new location at 1100 Ludlow Street is located in the heart of Market East and the Fashion District. Businesses will enjoy being close to Philadelphia's largest shopping, dining, and entertainment destination, East Market. Additionally, this location will be offering larger private offices with internal conference rooms, meaning businesses will have access to their own conference rooms. All day-to-day operational needs like IT, maintenance, and cleaning are handled by WeWork, allowing you to focus 100% of your time on building the future of your business. Beyond Philadelphia, WeWork is opening in new markets this year, including Las Vegas, Phoenix, Calgary, Salt Lake City, Raleigh, Boulder, Tampa, and Sacramento. Head over to WeWork.com to find a location near you or learn more about WeWork's custom workspace solutions for larger teams. Today's podcast is also brought to you by NetSuite. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. But the problem growing businesses have, what keeps them from knowing their numbers, is their hodgepodge of business systems. They have one system for accounting, another for sales, another for inventory, and so on. It's just a big, ineffective mess, taking up too much time and too many resources. And that hurts the bottom line. NetSuite by Oracle is the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform. With NetSuite, you can manage sales, finance and accounting, orders, and HR instantly, right from your desktop or phone. That's why NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system. And right now, NetSuite is offering valuable insights with a free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits at netsuite.com/538, the numbers, not the letters. That's netsuite.com/538 to download your free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits. Again, netsuite.com/538. All right, we're back. So it sounds like there are two competing trends going on. One, Democrats are increasingly doing well in the suburbs, particularly the Philadelphia suburbs. Republicans are increasingly doing well in rural parts of the state. When we look at 2018, what happened?
Well, basically, I mean, let's think about it this way. In 2018, in the state of Pennsylvania, 3 congressional seats changed hands. The 4th, the 5th, and the 6th Pennsylvania congressional districts, guess what? Philadelphia suburban seats. Where? Montgomery, Chester, and Delaware counties. The Republicans held on to one seat in the Philadelphia suburbs. That's the 1st congressional district. The House member is Brian Fitzpatrick, who, by the way, votes with the Democrats now on a lot of key issues. Because of redistricting that took place in 2011 in Pennsylvania, in 2012, because of the gerrymandering, Pennsylvania has 18 congressional seats. 13 of them were held by Republicans, 5 by Democrats. That existed 2012, 2014, 2016. And guess what happened? The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania redrew the boundary lines. And as a result of that, the Democrats picked up 4 seats. In 2018, as we speak right now, the Pennsylvania delegation has 9 Republicans and 9 Democrats. But let's go one step further. The Democrats picked up 11 seats in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, 11. The Republicans held 121. At the end of the election, 110. Guess where many of the seats that the Democrats gained were located? The Philadelphia suburbs and the Lehigh Valley. So let's take the state Senate. The Republicans had 34 seats. After the election last year, the Democrats picked up 5 seats. The Republicans held 29. 26 is a majority. It's a 50-seat state Senate. So these losses that the Republicans faced were suburban losses. You get the point. So that trend, now, what do we know? Democrats were more likely to vote. That narrowed a bit with the enthusiasm edge, but in the end, in my state, the Democrats more excited to vote. They got a larger proportion of college-educated women and millennials, the basic argument that I'm making. And, you know, even though the Democrats won the governorship, the Democratic Senator Bob Casey won re-election, and they picked up seats in the Pennsylvania legislature, the Republicans still hold control of both houses of the Pennsylvania legislature. Final point, the legislature is now more conservative because moderate Republicans were replaced and Republicans still control the General Assembly in my state. And we have a liberal governor and a very conservative legislature.
So where does Trump stand today in Pennsylvania? How popular is he?
Well, in the polls that we've done at F&M, we have him in the mid-30s in terms of his job performance. Other polls done have had it a bit higher, high 30s, low 40s. But he's not where he is has been nationally. He's 44 to 45% nationally in terms of the average. Your average
might be 42 and a half. Yeah, that's among adults. Though,
yeah,
among
you
registered
have
voters.
Yeah, you have
higher.
Him a little lower. And as you know, it depends whether, you know, how you're drawing the sample. I won't get into all the details of how that works, but there isn't any doubt that Trump's polling in Pennsylvania is weaker than it is nationally. Let me put it that way. Weaker than it is nationally. And we'll have to see. Nate's right. We're still so far away. It's very unpredictable. But here's the key that that it seems to me, because of the high degree of polarization, almost anything that Trump does doesn't shake up his base. And his opponents are still his opponents, even if he does things that we might conventionally say were positive and good. So the base of either party is so strongly attached, either for a candidate or against a candidate, that I don't know that even the middle is going to make that much of a difference. It might, because the middle shrinks. And then if you take a look at some analyses of independent voters, most independent voters vote the same way. Either, you know, about two-thirds of them, they're independent, but they vote Democratic two-thirds of the time or vote Republican. But it's still an open question about whether Trump can win re-election. And I, as I say, it's an open question as to whether he can carry my state.
So at this point, if Democrats wanted to make a play to win the state in 2020, they can run up the score in the suburbs, or they can try to close the gap in the rural parts of the state that went for Trump. Probably they will try to do both, but there's obviously a different message that appeals to suburban voters in Philadelphia versus the rural parts of the state. So what sounds to you guys like the best strategy for Democrats if they wanted to win the state in 2020?
I mean, I don't think it's that complicated, right? It's probably the suburbs and the places that were closest to 50-50 last time, which in fact Trump just narrowly won suburbs in Pennsylvania. Not that narrowly, but that's where you'd start. Because Pennsylvania, I mean, the trend of like rural Pennsylvania, people, what they call it, deriding like Pennsylvania or whatever.
Pennsylvania.
You got it.
Yeah. I mean, rural Pennsylvania is really quite rural. My family used to drive every year from Michigan to New York, and that involves spending most of your time in Pennsylvania, right? And you really kind of see like all the little small towns, and like and I don't think those areas, when Trump is on the ballot, are going to become blue again. But Democrats did underperform in these suburbs. You have a lot of people who, like I said, felt tenuously about both candidates and kind of took a chance on Trump. You did have Clinton campaigning here a lot, so she doesn't have the excuse that she would have in Wisconsin or Michigan, where they kind of underplayed those states. The campaigns were very active both. But
she tended to focus her campaign on urban and suburban Pennsylvania, while Trump went into the old mining and mill towns and spent a good time campaigning.
And look, suburbs are complicated term, right? Because like some classifications would classify middle-sized towns as suburbs, and those are different than the suburb of Philadelphia or something, or of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, what's fascinating about Pennsylvania is there are 67 counties. The Democrats typically will win somewhere between 11 and 15 counties.
Yeah.
But as I like to joke, that's where the people live, not the deer. But you get the point. I mean, I'm being facetious here. So the Democrats can win the state by focusing on the four Philadelphia suburban counties, the city of Philadelphia, Allegheny County, translation Pittsburgh, and its suburbs, and then a couple of counties up in the Lehigh Valley. So the Democrats don't have to worry. Oh, and they always carry Center County. Center County is that strange spelling, C-E-N-T-R-E, not Center, as you would, and as I like to say, translation Pennsylvania State
Canadian,
University.
Canadian Center.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. But you get the point. So once you get west of the Susquehanna River, the Democrats may win three counties. I mean, think about that.
We have these debates about whether Pennsylvania is Midwestern or Northeastern.
Northeastern, but parts of it are Midwest.
It's Midwestern. I mean, I think
Southeast is more megalopolis.
Yeah. But I've been to Center County, to State College, and like that feels a lot like where I grew up in East Lansing, Michigan.
Yeah.
And Pittsburgh feels to me most like a Midwestern city. Philadelphia does not, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, having lived in Wisconsin, driving the U-Haul from New York to Wisconsin, you start to feel like you're in the Midwest before you leave Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that in the rural parts of it, and that's certainly true.
We talked about Democrats' strategy. What do Republicans have to do?
Well, first of all, I think Republicans have to make sure that the turnout in rural and small town parts of the state goes up. They have to work on the percentage of the vote that Trump gets compared to whoever the Democratic nominee is. I do think that they can't completely walk away from the Philly suburbs and the Lehigh Valley just because of the population. and they're going to have to try to make some case there. I think to some extent we'll have to wait and see who the Democratic nominee is and how progressive. Go ahead.
Do you buy that Joe Biden in particular would be a strong Democratic candidate for Pennsylvania?
There's no doubt about it. Yeah. Biden was born in Scranton, lived there until he was 10. His dad, you know, they moved to Wilmington. His dad ended up in the car business. Here's a little known fact. Delaware does not have commercial television. They get their television from Philadelphia. So when Joe Biden for 36 years was the senator from Delaware, he was also routinely on Philadelphia television, which covers Philadelphia and the four suburban counties, among other places that we're talking about. And over the years, he spent a good bit of time traveling and spending time in Pennsylvania. So that's why in the polls that get done, when we do the Democratic primary in Pennsylvania, Biden easily leads. We haven't had any poll in a couple of months. But then when you look at the matchups, he also defeats President Trump in our state. So he does have.
But how many points?
Oh, it depends on the poll. Somewhere, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14 points. So it's pretty comfortable. He's got a pretty comfortable advantage over him.
And we generally say that head-to-head polling at this point in a general election is not all that valuable, but for what it's worth, just to get that.
Well, we like it because we can track change over time.
Again, I'm someone who thinks that Delaware should maybe be merged into
Pennsylvania
or Maryland, perhaps.
Oh, we don't need to get into that conversation. But it's interesting what you mentioned with regard to the Republican strategy in Pennsylvania. I saw that, I believe it was just last week, the Trump campaign launched a Women for Trump campaign in Pennsylvania, the Philadelphia suburbs?
Yeah, I mean, they fully understand that if they get swamped, if they lose the female vote, obviously, we're talking mostly about college-educated women. That's a serious problem for him trying to win re-election, not just in our state, but in other states as well.
To broaden this out slightly before we end our conversation, how correlated are Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin? We talked a lot about correlated states after the 2016 election and how that factored into our model. You know, we've just heard that it seems like Democrats are doing pretty well here. They did pretty well in 2018, for example. Trump is not popular. Are we seeing the same thing in the rest of the upper Midwest, or is Pennsylvania unique?
Well, see, now we kind of are in a more serious way getting to the question of demographically, how similar is Pennsylvania to a Midwestern state? And the answer is kind of, if it's divided, like, where would it be at the Susquehanna River, right? It's kind of half and half, I think literally, right? Clearly, in Western Pennsylvania, that paralleled an excellent performance for Trump in Ohio, and some of the same counties on the Ohio side of the Ohio-Pennsylvania border were also cases that were traditionally Democratic, where Trump not just won by gigantic margins, right? Whereas Philadelphia keeps becoming bluer and bluer and more cosmopolitan and whatever else, right? So it's like kind of half correlated. Look, I put it like this. I can imagine a Democratic strategy in 4 or 8 years, if Democrats are doing better in like Arizona and Georgia and Florida and North Carolina, I can imagine a world where Democrats say, you know what, we don't need Wisconsin. We don't need Michigan. I can't imagine a world where they can't compete in Pennsylvania, because there are a lot of urbanites in Pennsylvania. There are a lot of wealthy suburbs in Pennsylvania, right? And although Trump may be a good candidate for Western PA and Northeastern PA, you know, I think those are not voters that Democrats want to give up upon. We only need to kind of hold your own among them if you are banking a lot of votes in Philadelphia. So it's hard to imagine a Democrat bypassing Pennsylvania and having much of a shot to win.
What's fascinating is that for years, well, let me put it this way, from the end of the Civil War until the 1950s, the Republicans dominated Pennsylvania, as I said, you know, wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party. Not a single electoral vote from Pennsylvania went to the Democrats from the end of the Civil War until Roosevelt won the state in 1936. In fact, in 1932, when FDR won the presidency, Pennsylvania voted Republican. What happened to make Pennsylvania a competitive two-party state was the fact that Philadelphia, which had been Republican, began to transition to the Democrats in the 1950s. For the first time in the history of the state in 1960, the Democrats had a voter registration edge in the state. First time in history. So subsequent to that, Pennsylvania became very, very competitive. We had multiple candidates in primaries and in the general election flood into our states. But as I indicated earlier, for six straight elections, the Democrats carried our state. In fact, in 2012, they didn't campaign here at all because the Democrats had won, you know, at that point in five straight elections. But guess what happened? Mitt Romney, when he couldn't win Ohio, came to Pennsylvania late in the game in 2012. And so suddenly Pennsylvania had activity. And in 2016, we were heavily visited and heavily advertised by the candidates. And I think that's likely to be the case. Democrats are pouring into the state now, even though our primary is at the end of April. We've not been a primary factor since 1984. So we'll see if we end up a primary factor next year. But Democrats are already pouring into the state. And President Trump has been here. So we're going to be in the thick of it. There's no doubt about it.
Although 2008 was, Pennsylvania was the site of kind of an unsuccessful, I guess, Hillary Clinton comeback, right? So ironically,
in the primary, right.
Probably one of the states she came in with the happiest memories about after 2008 was Pennsylvania, which kind of almost resurrected her campaign and obviously right. A big problem for her 8 years later.
Right.
All right. Well, I think that's a good lesson to wrap on. Things can be unpredictable. One day you're up, the next day
great
you're
point.
Down. And we'll leave it with that. So thank you so much, Terry, for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And of course, Nate, thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
We have been speaking with G. Terry Madonna, director of the Franklin and Marshall College Poll and professor of public affairs at Franklin and Marshall College. And thanks to WeWork for setting us up with a place to record this podcast here in Philly at 1900 Market Street. Before we go, I also want to mention that we have a live show coming up on August 1st in Detroit, another, you know, one of those Midwestern states that we'll see who carries in 2020.
I'm wearing a Detroit Tigers hat to remind people to come to the Detroit show.
Yes.
You can't see it, but I'm wearing it.
Come to our show in Detroit on August 1st. You can go to 538.com/live for tickets and more information. And that'll also be in conjunction with the debates. So even if you don't think Michigan is an important state in 2020, we will be talking about how the Democrats did.
What kind of weird shade are you throwing at Michigan, dude?
I mean, you know, you just said that if Democrats start winning in places like Arizona, then maybe they can forget Michigan and Wisconsin. Although you said in 4 to 8 years.
4 to 8, not now. Yeah.
Not now. Okay, fair enough. Either way, see you there in Detroit, August 1st, 538.com/live. For now, my name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is here with us on the controls. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcast@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or review in the Apple Podcast Store. I'm not just saying that. Actually, go do it. Go leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.